Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long. Healing rain is coming down, it's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. It is the Wednesday edition of The Cross in the Desert. And as I look out my window here, I can say unequivocally, this is the first real, beautiful, warm, spring-like day in a long time. And I hope wherever you're located in the internet world and in the country that you too are experiencing this beautiful, real nice-looking first day of spring kind of weather. I know winter has had a monstrous grip on everyone, and it seems like it wouldn't let go of its grip, but today it looks beautiful and bright, and so that sets the tone for my program today. So glad that you could take out some time in your busy schedule to join me. I think we have a very important program today. We're dealing with the issue of controversy. We're dealing with the issue of Islamophobia. Now, what that means in a nutshell is if you speak any word of correction, any critique about Islamic theology or practice, you're accused of spreading this disease called Islamophobia and causing people to be afraid and misunderstood. And this is a very politically correct maneuver. Let me just explain. Instead of dealing with the issues, we yell Islamophobia. Or we could say if we're having an issue with the black community, we disagree with something, we speak out, we're accused of being racist. So it's the same way of not dealing with the issue. In other words, it's a way to stop the conversation, to put a silence to it, because this is how far we're going to go and no further. Now, this is a clever trick, a very, very clever maneuver to stop the issues from being raised. And it's very interesting that this is the way that the Islamic community has decided to respond to the new powerful documentary, Honor Diaries. Now, I ordered the DVD a week ago. I watched it. And I was really impressed with these nine ladies that formed this little group and talked about the issue of female genital mutilation, honor killings, women's rights, just the whole mindset of what it means to have the honor and shame mindset, if you will. This was a very powerful documentary. My wife watched it with me, and she was just horrified at the different experiences these women had to go through. And they shared tearfully their stories, but they also raised the issue that something must be done in the Islamic community about these issues. Well, this is the response from CARE. CARE is the Council on American and Islamic Relations, and they have opted out. They are even trying to block the showing of this film in many universities. So what I want to do this morning, I want to take you to a special news report on Fox News with Megyn Kelly, and they're going to discuss this issue of universities blocking the showing of this powerful film, Honor Diaries, right here on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
A growing backlash tonight over a film that is trying to bring attention to the so-called honor violence inflicted on Muslim women around the world. The film is called Honor Diaries, and while it has been shown dozens of times on U.S. college campuses, not to mention at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, several U.S. universities have postponed or flat out now canceled screenings of the film after groups like the Council of American Islamic Relations, or CARE, complained that the film is Islamophobic. Here's a clip from the trailer.
Anything from wearing short sleeves, refusing to wear a headscarf, being seen talking to a man, those things can be deemed dishonorable.
Thousands of women have been detained for dressing un-Islamically. Like this woman screaming as she's pushed into a police car.
The honor system in Muslim-majority societies is really the basis of a lot of harm that is perpetuated against women.
It's systematic, institutionalized misogyny.
I was crying and begging him to stop. Then he put his hand on my mouth like this. I couldn't breathe. I was crying. But he used me anyway.
The issue of forced marriages, child marriage, and honor abuse is a worldwide problem.
When you do dissent with what is portrayed as mainstream belief, you are ostracized. There are threats of murder, there are threats of rape, physical mutilation.
So why would a group like CARE want to silence such a film? Brooke Goldstein is a human rights attorney who first brought this issue to our attention, and Agnieszka Karolik is Senior Communications Coordinator for CARE Chicago. Agnieszka, let me start with that question to you. Why would CARE want to silence this film?
Well, first of all, Megan, thank you for having me on the show tonight. And I wanted to let you know one thing that CARE is not against. We are not against talking about these very serious issues. CARE actually put out a statement recently that you put on your show last night that we are against female genital mutilation, honor killings, any forms of violence against women. What we do want to do, however, is tell the public about the funders behind this film so that the public can make their own informed decision about whether or not they want to show it, screen it, or watch it.
Okay, but it seems that you object to the film being shown because you object to its content. I mean, if you don't like the filmmaker, that's one thing, but you appear not to like the content as well because you're happy that it's getting canceled.
That's not true at all.
Well, you sent out a tweet today with a smiley face saying that it had been canceled at one of these universities.
One of the universities that decided to postpone the film actually was brought about by students on the campus and faculty who were concerned once they found out who was behind this film, which is the Clarion Project, which is a well-known Islamophobic organization.
Okay, but here's what I'm trying to get at, and I appreciate you being here because, you know, your side needs to be represented, and we tried that and had some trouble that was outlined on the show last night. But I understand you don't like the group that made the film, but the film stands or falls based on its own content. And I'm asking you, what about the content in this film do you not like?
As I said, we don't have a problem with the content of the film. I understand that there are women who participate in this film who are Muslim women who work on these very serious issues. What I'm personally disgusted by as a Muslim woman, as a feminist, is that someone like the Clarion Project would take this film and use it to promote their own hate-filled agenda. That's my problem with this movie.
Brooke?
You know, it's unbelievable because CARE is obviously protesting the content of the film, and it's an indefensible position. I think the audience deserves to know who the Council on American Islamic Relations is. Its sole purpose, it was set up to be the PR arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. It has connections
to Hamas. That is not true.
That
is a lie, Brooke.
It is absolutely true, and let me speak. It has connections to Hamas. It was founded by two people who are deeply connected to Hamas. In fact, the former counterterrorism chief of the FBI said that CARE effectively aids international terrorist groups. Senator Chuck Schumer said CARE has ties to terrorism. Everybody knows that, and the founders have intimate links
Brooke,
to Hamas.
Brooke, this is not true.
So CARE is not
That's
an
not
authority on what Americans can and cannot see. CARE operates as the Islamic speech police. It goes around bullying and intimidating anyone who is brave enough to speak publicly about the threat of Islam and Islamist terrorism, and violence in the Muslim world. And now it has gone too far. It has bullied students into stifling their First Amendment-protected free speech rights to air this film. If CARE doesn't want you to see it, you should take it as a cue to go out and watch this movie, because you know there's truth contained therein. And what CARE does, it deflects from the issue.
Let her respond. Hold on. Stand by, Brooke, because I want Agnieszka to respond to what you said. Go ahead.
Thank you, Megan. As I said, many student groups who became aware of the funding behind this project, behind this film, grew very concerned, and they actually started conversations on their campuses. Many of them said that they wanted to start their own events, asking domestic violence abuse organizations in our own cities who work with Muslim women here in the United States, because, again, CARE is actually a domestic organization. We're the biggest Muslim civil rights and advocacy group here in the United States.
No, they're not.
And we help Muslims here in the United States.
No, they're not. They're a self-appointed group that claims to be a civil rights group, but it's anything but. CARE has a systematic campaign to go around and target anybody who speaks publicly about the threat of militant Islam as Islamophobic, and they do this time and time again, and they're targeting the people within the film, and shame on them for doing that. CARE has sued a former congressman, Cass Ballinger, for calling CARE, quote, a fundraising arm for Hezbollah.
They're very litigious,
ABC.
And they don't like any segment.
You know, we're not here
like
to talk about CARE.
About
I'm here to talk about the film.
But CARE has become part of the story because for the reasons we discussed last night, we discussed this movie last night, and you won't be surprised to hear, Brooke, that they wrote us an email demanding a retraction. Well, guess what? You're not getting it. Agnieszka, I want to ask you, because it sounds like you are in favor of the students speaking up and making their voices heard, but I still do not understand why calling attention to this problem that affects Muslim women would be objectionable to you. I mean, as a Muslim woman yourself, don't you want this to stop? And how do we make it stop if we don't shine a light on it?
Of course I want it to stop. And as I said, there are many Muslim women and organizations right here in the United States that are working on this issue, like the Sakana Project. They're working with My Jihad
and
around domestic violence.
And many Muslim women are featured in this film.
Exactly. And as I said, I have no problem with the woman featured in this film. I have no doubt that many of them are working around these issues. But I asked them to question why they participate in this film if they knew who was funding
it. What's wrong with the people who are funding the movie? Because they're Jews?
The Clarion Project has been named...
Yeah, it's been
I'm not
named
saying
Islamophobic
that. The Clarion Project has been named
right,
as an Islamophobic organization.
And then I've got to go. Clarion has not received a defense. Go ahead, Brooke, quickly.
What qualifies as being Islamophobic is raising awareness about Islamist terrorism and advocating for the human rights of Muslim women. That's what qualifies as being Islamophobic, and that is what CARE is objecting to, the fact that Jews produced this movie.
Okay, I got to go, but I want to tell our viewers, the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, they canceled the screening of this film. This is the same campus that is featuring a highly controversial art installation on abortion, calling abortion a life-sustaining act. Abortion. That's fine on the campus of University of Michigan Ann Arbor. Celebrate abortion. But a film that tries to call attention to this situation for Muslim when women forget about it, that's banned. That's the world we live in. Ladies, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're taking your thoughts on it. Follow me on Twitter at Megyn Kelly. Let me know what you think. Also, Facebook.com/TheKellyFile. Up next.
Well, that's the Kelly File on Fox News. A very, very heated debate going on there. And again, what I believe Kelly and her guest is reacting to is the continued political correctness machine that CARE will wheel out the moment that we object to something that's taught in Islam. Now, the representative for CARE is trying to say, oh, no, those issues are important and we're doing something about those issues. Well, here's the problem I have with this whole thing. The holy book of Islam is the Quran. The Quran itself endorses a violent aspect against women. Now, let me explain. Surah chapter 4, verse 35, gives the husband the right to discipline his wife if only he suspects infidelity. He can confront her, not sleep with her, and if those two things don't work, he has the right to strike her or beat her. This is very, very clear in the Quran. So you can imagine why CARE would object to this movie, because actually, in many ways, the treatment of women in this movie is endorsed by the Muslims' own holy book. You see it in their history as well, the treatment of women. going back to more things about Islam, Muhammad had a vision of women in hell, and the bottom line was that these women did not honor their husbands and support them in the way they should have, and they're spending eternity in hell. So when you read the Quran and find out that it's very clear, Surah chapter 4, that men are superior to women, and when you go on further and find out that there is a discipline that the man is allowed to institute if he suspects his wife of adultery, that he can beat her. Now, I've heard many explanations on this verse, one of them from Yusuf Ali, that it says, well, that doesn't mean beat violently, it means lightly strike, okay? Well, even if that's what it did mean, the very fact that a husband can be given the right to do this is what contributes to the problems these ladies discuss in honor diaries. Now, one of the things I will say that I was a little surprised about in honor diaries was that the different women in there, and I totally respect them, I put them on high regard for coming out. It takes so much courage for them to come out and do what they did. I have the highest respect for these women. They are the true patriots for hope and freedom and women's rights. But one of the things that disturbs me is that the women in this film still maintain their Muslim faith, and I wonder if they understood what the Quran teaches about correction and discipline of a woman. If they really understand it from my, as I read the Quran and look at it, wouldn't they come to the same conclusion that I come to, that the very thing they're fighting against, which is abuse of women, honor killings, which I'm so much behind them 100%, if they could see that the Quran itself is endorsing a form of disciplined punishment by allowing a man to strike his wife, I wonder if they understand that that's promoting in so many ways the thing they're fighting against. A question for another time, but I think it's an important question, that husbands are to love their wives. And in no way does that ever leave room at any time, under any circumstance, for any physical retaliation. It's very sad, but I think that's an issue that also needs to be raised in the context of what this amazing, powerful documentary is talking about. So there you have the response from CARE. And you keep asking yourself, why would they be so vehement in having this movie blocked? Well, their answer is the Clarion Project. Well, I haven't heard anything whatsoever in the CARE representative that leads me to believe that this group is promoting an agenda, that they're Islamophobic or anything. I don't see her reasoning. But what I want to do right now is go back to Fox News, and we're going to hear another clip and ask the question, really, why is CARE trying to block honor diaries? Let's listen to this important little interview here right now on the cross in the desert.
Good morning, 24 minutes after the hour. It's a powerful new documentary exposing the shocking violence against Islamic women in the name of honor.
Anything from wearing short sleeves, refusing to wear a headscarf, being seen talking to a man, those things can be deemed dishonorable.
Thousands of women have been detained for dressing un-Islamically. Like this woman screaming as she's pushed into a police car.
The honor system in Muslim-majority societies is really the basis of a lot of harm that is perpetuated against women.
It's systematic, institutionalized misogyny.
Oh, it's disgusting. Now the producers of Honor Diaries are calling for college campuses who canceled the screenings of this film to reschedule them. This after schools gave in to pressure from the Council for American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, which says the film encourages Islamophobia. Joining us now to weigh in is Dr. Quanta Ahmed. She practiced medicine in Saudi Arabia and is an expert contributor to the Honor Diaries. Doctor, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
So what is the argument? How is this anti-Islamic? This film seems to be standing up for the rights of Muslim women.
I don't think there's a logic to it. I think it's sheer opportunism for certain politically motivated groups to gain traction. And we at Honor Diaries are very committed to bringing the message of hardship and violence children and women are facing, we're not interested in allowing our message to be hijacked for opportunist groups. There's no basis for Islamophobia in the content. These are real situations faced by Muslim women, as described by Muslim women activists.
Here, and you're exposing a huge problem with the female mutilation and the so-called honor killings and the young girls being forced into marriage at a very young age. We have some numbers from the United Nations that I think our viewers will find quite startling. 125 million women and girls suffered mutilation in Africa and the Middle East since 1989. Over 60 million girls worldwide are child brides married before the age of 18. And when you hear these numbers from the UN, and these women have been silenced, right? And now the makers of this film being silenced. What type of metaphor do you see there?
I see that really as, first of all, an opportunity, and we also should put it into perspective. Only three screenings have actually been cancelled, and some of them are suggested to be postponed. Over 87 screenings have occurred, including in British Parliament, the United Nations, the National Press Club. Over 500,000 people have seen this movie on DirecTV already. So we should put it into proportion, but it's important. It's important for us as Americans to know that these kinds of atrocities occur to women here in the United States too, in diaspora communities, and where I come from in Britain as well. So the more awareness we can raise, the more we can protect women and girls.
And yet you never hear about it. In this country, very rarely, feminist groups are focused on threats like the Duke lacrosse team. Why aren't they more exercised about these atrocities happening here?
It may be to do with the diaspora communities. For instance, in the United States, there is a Somali migrant population in the Pacific Northwest where female genital mutilation has come to some attention, and the American Medical Association has assisted with that and raised awareness. But in Britain, for instance, the issue with forced marriages and abduction of children for forced marriages or honor killings is escalating so much that you'll see one of my colleagues in the movie has educated the British Metropolitan Police and been recognized by Prime Minister David Cameron. So for minor groups that I don't regard as significant in the United States to claim that they are asserting themselves and canceling screenings is only opportunism. It's not representative of a balanced and thoughtful movie.
But it is representative of their tactics.
Yes, that's their modus operandi.
Yes.
Well said, Tucker.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Doctor. We appreciate your coming on.
Yeah.
By the way, we reached out to CARE, the group in question, for a statement. We haven't heard back, but we'll bring in anything if we get it. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being a champion to this important cause.
I'm so glad that Fox News has taken the opportunity to bring this issue to the forefront in a fair and balanced way. I don't think the producers and those participating in Honor Diaries would want anything but a respectful dialogue. I don't believe they want so much contention and debate, although the issues should be and could be debated. I think they're looking to educate us. And I know that after watching Honor Diaries, it was very a moving, emotional film to watch. And then you have the special features where you get to know the actual people in Honor Diaries. And get to meet them, Raquel Saraswata, Nazanin Afshin-Jam, others that I have a hard time pronouncing their names, but they're very representative in the movie. You find out a little bit about these ordinary human rights activists who are trying to educate us, because they are aware that we as Westerners that watch the film don't really understand the honor and shame in the culture speaking about. So they take time to talk about what is honor, and they talk about the problem of forced marriage and the psychological ramifications that has on the daughter in the family and how she feels like she has got to obey her parents or she will dishonor them, and that if she doesn't do what they tell her to do in this forced marriage, that she will be considered dead. They will ostracize her as a family member. And in some situations in the Middle East, they even kill. So honor and shame is something that we need to be educated about, why the Muslim honor and shame mindset is so prevalent. What's it all about? And I think after watching Honor Diaries, you will have a better understanding of what these ladies are talking about. So here's what I would say to you. Whatever CARE raises this objection, go see it. Find out what's so controversial. You as a viewer, as a moviegoer, you make up your own mind, and in fact, you should schedule a showing in your church. I really hope the church that I go to will get involved and get on the bandwagon and show this film. And here's the thing I want to say, though, and I want to make a point here about the film. As important as this is, educationally speaking, and I am so much behind this. Here's what I would like to suggest to you. If you are a Christian and you've met a Muslim family, a Muslim man or woman, I would say that the approach of showing this movie is not something I would recommend in the beginning. And here's why. If you're witnessing to Muslims and talking to them about your faith, the most important message that Muslims need to hear is the love of Jesus. Because as important as this film is, it can tend to create barriers and build up defenses if, in the context, you are talking to Muslims about your Christian faith. Now, if you are in a situation where they want to know what you think of Islam and what are some of your problems, then that's an opportunity to perhaps suggest this movie and that you sit down together and watch it. That I'm all for. But if you're sharing your faith actively with Muslims, maybe Honor Diaries is not something that you would want to show, at least in the beginning, simply because friendship with Muslims is based on an unconditional love. And if you have concerns about the issues raised in this movie, you can discuss that, but it can be very, very difficult in creating barriers between you and your Muslim friends. And why I say that is because talking about Muhammad, talking about Islamic history and things like that, I think can tend to build barriers in some situations with Muslim friends. Now, I said this to say that. Go see it and share it with your Muslim friends in the context if they raise the issue. But it's not something I would walk up to my Muslim friends I've met for the first time and say, hey, by the way, let's get together and watch this. This may not be a good idea in the beginning unless you become friends, that you respect and understand each other, and that the issues come up. Then and only then I think it's appropriate. And I hope you hear what I'm saying here. My heart is to talk to Muslims about the incredible love of Christ. And that's my focus, because these other issues, as important as they are, can raise barriers and build up these walls that we want to tear down. But again, in your context, in your situation, if you both agree that we want to talk about this issue, that you want to get each other's perspective, then it's a good idea. But do this with respect. The Bible says, be ready always to give an answer for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and respect. Because we don't want to ridicule Muslims. We don't want to throw their history in their face. And in doing so, we can alienate ourselves from them in certain situations. Okay? So I hope this helps you get an idea of my heart. I wrote a book called Tears in a Bottle, Seeing Through Their Eyes. And in that book, it's the story of a friendship between a Muslim woman and a Christian. In the context of this book, my character, Esther, comes to New York with her abusive husband and her child. And they are ridiculed and shown a lot of hatred because in the context of this story, the Muslim community wants to build next to the World Trade Center Memorial a mosque. And this is a real story that happened a few years ago. And when they see Esther coming to New York, and they are mad at her, they're upset with the Muslims, and they ridicule what they're going to do. And Esther feels this discrimination and hatred from this community here in New York City. And I wrote this book to say, look, number one, not every Muslim is a terrorist. That's very important, to stop labeling every Muslim as a terrorist in our thinking. They're not. That's very simple. And the book is to try to put yourself in their place. And the book is about those Muslims that are peaceful Muslims, that have nothing to do with anything about this movie. They have nothing to do with the things that go on in this movie. They're just everyday peaceful Muslims who come here to live out their hopes and dreams. So in that context, my book, Tears in a Bottle, is about how we need to be respectful to Muslims and not label everyone as a terrorist. And in the context of my book, my friend Ariel is a support and help to this Muslim woman, and she finds out that her husband is abusing her, so she's there, if you will, to put her arm around her as a friend and to walk with this Muslim woman through these difficult challenges she's facing. So this book is different that I wrote. It is to show true Christian friendship to Muslims. And how far would you go to support your Muslim friend? How far would you go as a Christian to stand up for them when there is unjust hatred and discrimination against them? And there are many, many opportunities we have as Christians not to ever condone the violence committed by radical Muslims. We should always speak out against that and always, always name that as wrong and criticize that. The intention of my book, Tears in the Bottle, was to say, look, come alongside your Muslim friend and support them and help them. Most of these Muslims are very peaceful, law-abiding citizens that have nothing to do with the issues of this movie. So I wanted to make that point because there's a tendency for us as Christians sometimes is to talk only on the violent aspects of the radical Muslims. And when we're talking to Muslims as Christians, our focus should never really be on that issue. It's a whole different issue. And so I hope I've clarified that with you because I think it's important that Muslims understand that we truly do love them. And part of loving Muslims is to expose the radical elements of it and to speak out against it. So again, after I've said everything that I've just said to you, please go out and watch this movie. Be educated and ask lots of good questions. I think this needs to be part of our dialogue, that we need to address these issues in a respectful way. And I think we need to speak out against the political correctness of care that is trying to prevent this movie from being shown. I think there needs to be some honest dialogue between those that agree with the movie and those that disagree, some important dialogue. The only way we're going to find a solution to the issues raised in this movie, some very real issues raised in this movie, that we're going to find honest answers and solutions is that we talk about it, that we discuss it, and that together we work to implement changes. This movie was not made at all with any intention in mind of offending Muslims. It was made to protect women. Because the issue here is the rights of women, what women are suffering through, what they're going through. And I applaud the producers of this movie to bring to the forefront the issue of how women are treated in these Middle Eastern settings, that it is wrong, that it is harmful, that it is psychologically, physically, and spiritually dangerous and destructive, and that unless we bring these issues to the forefront, and deal with them in a realistic way, more and more women are going to be hurt and damaged physically and psychologically for life. So there are some graphic images in Honor's Diary, but you need to see it. We need to stop using political correctness to silence people. We need to deal honestly with the issues. And this, I hope, is the result of those that go watch Honor Diaries. I hope that the result is that we really do something about the problem, we really intelligently, respectfully discuss these issues, and that we educate each other. I think if we do that, then the producers will have felt that they have accomplished their purpose in the making of this film, okay? Well, what I want to do right now on The Cross and the Desert, I'm going to take you to some good music from the Newsboys. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about a very, very interesting film. It's been out for a while, and we're going to discuss Persepolis. It's an Iranian animated cartoon. It's really, really a great film. But before we do that, let's hear the Newsboys and Your Love Never Fails right here on The Cross in the Desert.
Your love never fails.
excellent music from the Newsboys. And if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend God's Not Dead. Just a great assortment of Christian movies that are out now. The documentary Veil of Tears, dealing with the oppression of women in the caste system in India, a must-see. I'm so glad. This is a great way to start our spring, highly educate us in good, wholesome Christian movies and documentaries. So if you haven't seen God's Not Dead, I really, really enjoyed this movie. It's very, very inspiring to your Christian faith, I'll put it to you that way. And I won't tell you all about it because it would ruin it. I don't want to do that. You go out and see it and enjoy some great music from the Newsboys. Well, we're going to shift our gears now to Iran. Of course, the name of my program is Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. Some very, very disappointing news that we got just this past week. There were 900 prisoners released after Nowruz by the Supreme Leader. He signed off on 920 prisoners, none of them political prisoners, and that means Saeed was not on the list. And this was tremendously disappointing to me, and I'm certainly sure to Negma, his wife, as she continues the fight for Saeed's freedom. The only bright glimmer of hope in all of this is that Saeed is in a hospital, a private hospital in Tehran, being treated for his internal bleeding injuries. At least he's getting good hot food and meals and rest. He certainly needs surgery for this terrible, terrible problem he has. But we're thankful. We're thankful to the Lord that he is in a safer place at this time. But of course, that simply he's not free is unacceptable. That is unacceptable. As we continue this fight, there was a recent article in the Persecution April edition about Saeed and Negma. It's called Hope in the Midst of Suffering, The Mystery of Persecution. You can get that on Negma's page and on mine as well. It's a great article. Negma says, the Lord has counted our family worthy enough to send Saeed to a dark place that he would be able to share people who are in complete despair. Negma also says, this has been very hard, but spiritually, it is the best time in my life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Just an incredibly courageous lady. She says to the president that wrote this article, Jeff King, God is holding me up. And we continue to support you, Negma, with our thoughts and prayers and speaking out. BeHeardProject.com, if you haven't been there, go to it and sign the petition. Continue to speak out for Saeed's freedom. And please read this article, Hope in the Midst of Suffering, The Mystery of Persecution. This can be very helpful for you and me who are struggling with issues of suffering and trials. It is a very encouraging, straightforward, honest article, a very well done. It's on a nice PDF format where you actually click and the pages turn. It's an amazing, amazing article. Negma has become a voice for the persecuted. And she goes on to say in this article, God was preparing Saeed for prison. He didn't know so, but he was doing so. And this is also a call to the church. Negma says that the story is not finished. It has a powerful message to us as American Christians. There is intense suffering in following Jesus, and it's a call to stand with those who are in pain. A very important article. Just please go to read this article on my page and on Negma's page. You will really, really be inspired by it. Well, as I mentioned before the break, there is an amazing movie I wasn't aware of, but my good friend Romina, an Iranian friend, suggested this movie to me. And I'm so glad she did it because it gives me an understanding, a deeper understanding of the plight of Iranians for hope. This is a movie called Persepolis. It's an animated cartoon movie that has won many, many international film awards, the creation of Marjane Satrapi, who actually wrote this as a comic strip, and it became a movie to her surprise and amazement. Now, what I want to do before I get into the movie itself is I want to play a short clip of the movie, a trailer, the UK Persepolis. So I want you to hear this right now on the cross in the desert.
I live down the block.
In the middle of a revolution.
Down with the
Margie, go to bed now.
Marjan is growing up.
Stevie Wonder, Julio Iglesias,
nail polish, lipstick,
Iron Maiden,
and about to embark.
What's with a punk suit, huh? Fist on the back of your jacket.
On an amazing journey of discovery.
All right, you better get going.
No more crying. Europe is waiting.
You lived through a revolution and a war?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
So it's true what people say. Iranians have no manners whatsoever.
She told him she was French.
Now, in a strange new world, as her country changes forever, so will she. From Marjan Satrapi's best-selling graphic novels...
Marjan Toko, I love you!
...comes the story of a lifetime.
In life, everyone always has a choice.
About finding the strength...
Never forget who you are.
...and the courage to be true to yourself.
I worked 20 years for this country.
The Birth of Venus is one of his most important works... What you call immodest.
Well, then stop staring at my butt!
You dare me to take my veil off?
You wouldn't dare.
Well, I guess you're wondering, you know, is there a story behind this film? Is there a way to find out really what brought it about? Well, I want you to hear this real short bio I found on YouTube about Marjan Satrapi, and we'll listen to it right now, and we'll come back in just a couple of minutes.
Marjan Satrapi was born on November 22, 1969. She was born in Rasht, a place near the edge of the Caspian Sea, and grew up in Tehran. As a child and throughout her entire life, Marjan Satrapi has faced many challenges. Not only did she live through the mayhem of the Islamic Revolution against the Shah, the country's monarch, but later also had to deal with the difficulties she faced during her time living in Vienna. She is an only child and was born to Marxist parents, this meaning that they believed in the theories first advanced by Karl Marx. During the revolution, her parents would always take part in the demonstrations and protests that called for the Shah to be brought down. Unfortunately for her family, the religious rule turned out to be even more callous. Marjane's uncle had been imprisoned and then executed by the Shah's regime. It was events such as these that caused Marjan to second-guess her values and religious beliefs. While living in Tehran, Marjan attended the Lycée Français, the French high school. With everything going on at the time, Marjan began to question everything, including the government and their subjugation towards women. Once she started openly asking these questions to her teachers, her parents became very distressed and decided it'd be best if they sent her away. Away meaning some place where she would be free of the veil and the other restraints of the government and strict religious rule. With that being noted, they decided to send her away to Vienna, Austria. This was when she was merely 14 years old. During Marjan's time in Austria, she experimented and experienced numerous new things. She befriended punks and anarchists, fell in love, fell in heartbreak, and had a few romances here and there, and also began the use of drugs. she jumped from temporary home to home until finally she ended up homeless on the streets. When Marjane was 18, she decided to move back home. When she returned, she attended a university and struggled to once again live with the intense government and religious rule. She later received her diploma and then a master's degree in visual communication. Later on, Marjane decided to move to France, where she still lives to this day. She is currently married with a Swedish man and has no children. It is here that her illustrations can be seen regularly in newspapers and magazines. Her most renowned books, Persepolis Parts 1 and Part 2, were later adapted into a film and then combined into one whole book, The Complete Persepolis. This film became world-renowned and even won the jury prize at the Cannes Film Festival. In total, Persepolis has gained over 25 major international award nominations and over 15 major awards. Satrapi is also well known for her other books. These include Chicken and Plums, a story of her uncle telling his life story in the days leading up to his death, The Sigh, and Monsters Are Afraid of the Moon.
And that's a short biographical sketch of the creator of Persepolis, Marjane Satrapi. A little bit of history of the background to why she came up with this idea to begin with. She grew up as a child during the Revolution. She experienced the heartache and sorrow that it brought, the changes to her country. And she took these events and experiences and put it together in a kind of a comic strip, and it's really an amazing film. It shows what every family, and no matter where they are in the world, what they can go through. It's about family, life, love, marriage, death, heartache. It's pretty much a humanistic type of film. And of course, the difference is it's talking about her struggles living in Iran during the time of the revolution, going back with the new government, the new rules, the oppression of fear. I highly recommend this film because I think it tells the story in a very unique and creative way. In fact, this is interesting that I came upon this film because right now I'm engaged in writing my eighth book, and the subject of my book is the story of a friendship between Shabnam and Sahar growing up as young children during the Iranian Revolution. So I found this unique that I came upon this film at the same time I'm writing this book called Chasing After Rainbows, subtitle, Stories of the Revolution. So I'm attracted to anything that talks about the Iranian Revolution. I want to understand it better. I want to be able to communicate this to my friends in Iran, also to my friends all over the world, so they too can have a perspective of what life was like growing up at that very transitional time with the reign of the Shah to then the total control and dictatorship of Khomeini. It's so important, so interesting to talk about these things. Well, one thing we've learned today is that women, though they are beaten and oppressed, are some of the most courageous people in the world. A couple of years ago, I came upon a story of a courageous woman, and I want to talk to you about her. And the name of my blog that I wrote about this lady was called Until the Whole World Hears. One of my favorite contemporary Christian artists is Casting Crowns. In a powerful music video, the band could be seen on a rooftop at sunrise performing one of their best songs that describes the joy and excitement of proclaiming the good news of Christ. Right below the band is a large crowd that has gathered to join them in singing, Until the Whole World Hears. Until the whole world hears, Lord, we are crying up, lifting up your name for all to hear the sound. Like voices in the wilderness, we are crying out, until the day draws near, we'll sing till the whole world hears. This exciting and uplifting story song by Casting Crowns is the first thing I thought of when I read about a Saudi Arabian woman who had publicly announced her faith in Christ. Quote, I have left the darkness of Wahhabi Islam and entered the light of Christianity, unquote. 28-year-old Miriam described on a video seen by millions on the Internet. She explained that Jesus had appeared to her in a dream and gave her the name Miriam. In the video, Miriam proclaimed that she had forsaken Islam and converted to Christianity because of the treatment of women by the morality police in Saudi Arabia. As a result of the video, Saudi officials are outraged and promise to put an end to Christian evangelism. In order to protect her identity and her life, Miriam has decided to continue wearing her hijab. Well, I was inspired and in awe of Miriam's courage. She lives in the country that gave birth to the Prophet Muhammad and the religion of Islam. She has put her life on the line and declared to the whole world that she's willing to pay the price for following Jesus. Miriam's decision to leave Islam is not without consequences. Saudi Arabia adheres to strict Sharia law. Women have few rights and are treated as possessions. According to the Hadith, a large collection of the sayings and actions and teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, a Muslim does not have the freedom to leave Islam. In Al-Bukhari's translation number 6922, Muhammad is reported as saying, quote, if any man change his religion, kill him. This statement reportedly declared by Muhammad actually contradicts the Quran, which says in several surahs that there is, quote, no compulsion in religion. Well, what is it that attracted Miriam, you think, to Christianity? Many Muslim women who have come to faith in Christ say they left because when they read the Bible, they saw compassion and love in Jesus, something they had not experienced while they were in Islam. Miriam is not ashamed to publicly declare her faith in Christ. She does so at the risk of her own life. Like the song by Casting Crowns, she is crying out until the whole world hears. The world has heard her. Can you say the same about your testimony? I wanted to end today's program on a positive note to show that these women are courageous, like those in Honor Diaries, to publicly state their beliefs, to publicly come out and not be silenced. And in the same way, this very courageous lady who was renamed in the video, Miriam, has said, I have left Wahhabi Islam for Jesus. She does so at the risk of her life, but she's not ashamed and not afraid. And so I want to honor this lady, I don't know her real name, by saying we as Christians have a unique and precious responsibility to share the treasure of the gospel until the whole world hears. And we do it in so many ways, in directly proclaiming it or in the way we live, which is our best apologetic, that the world sees not only what we say, but how we live it. And we do it in so many ways every day. This should give us pause when we go to the workplace and we're surrounded by those that are not Christians. It should remind us that they're not just listening to what we say, but how we behave. And let me tell you, I know it's so painful, called on the way that you live and how it may be contradictory to what you say. May it never be that we as Christians are called on the carpet, if you will, about that. May our lifestyle bear witness to what we say. And we're imperfect, and we're sinners, and we fall many times. And the world is watching us to see if we really live by what we say, that our faith has actions, and that although we're imperfect and although we fail, our life should match the words that we proclaim. And so I think I'm putting this out there for many of us who struggle with that. I know I do myself. We're called to be a light in the darkness. We're called to light up the marketplace, not only with our words, but with our actions. And so one of the most important things we can do is to be a vehicle of compassion. Today, I pray for you to not be silent, to raise these issues we've talked about on the cross in the desert today, to do so respectfully, but nonetheless to do so. We should never let political correctness silence us. So we as Christians, we need to speak out. We need to do so and not be afraid of the cost and not be afraid at all. I want to let you know that you can come in front and request me on my Facebook page. I'm Randy L. Noble. You're going to see many, many postings about the issues in Iran. In particular, we're still speaking out and praying for Rahana Jabari, who is on trial for her life for defending herself against a rapist. Please come to my Facebook page and sign this petition and speak out so that this young 26-year-old Iranian girl will survive and not be executed. It's so important. I ask you to come to my page. It's full of issues and full of petitions, and join me in not being silent, but speaking out. I want to say God bless you. Thank you for spending your time with me today. I will see you very soon, next week, next Monday or Tuesday, on the cross in the desert. You have yourself an incredible weekend. God bless you. See you very soon again.
Healing rain is coming down, it's coming down.